Good day, everybody. My name is Praise, and we are back with more Praise Chat, where I give you guys the latest and greatest news, movies, and film entertainment. Last time I was on here, I did an episode kind of listing like my top favorite movies of last year. And obviously, we're now in a brand new year. I'm recording this in January 21st, 2022. And there's going to be a lot of nice movies coming out this year. And I just wanted to kind of run down a few of them that I'm most looking forward to at the start of this brand new year. Now, granted, like, obviously, I'm not sure if all of these movies are going to be coming out this year that I'm mentioning here now, but I'm very interested to see that with the types of cast they have and the types of storytellers that are going to be coming through with their movies. I'm hoping that we get a fine, indelible film of batch of movies as we go along through the list. And like I said in my last episode, none of these are in order. I'm just kind of like, I guess the way I can explain it is it's just kind of like me. I don't know how to say it, but it's basically just like me talking about these movies that I'm really, really excited about and why I'm excited for them. So, yeah, let's just get started. So I'm going to go with the honorable mentions first, only because the honorable mentions will be a lot quicker to go through and not too much like meat to the bones there, but I'm going to kind of give my thoughts. Now, the first one I'm going to go over is one that was my most anticipated, one of my most anticipated movies from this year that did already come out, and it's a movie called Belle, and it's directed by Mamoru Hosoda. If you don't know who that is, he's the guy that directed a ton of amazing, beautiful animated films, going back to like Summer Wars, Wolf Children, The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, The Boy and the Beast, and most recently and his last film that preceded this one, Belle, Mirai, had been nominated for Best Animated Feature in 2018 or 19, I believe, one of those 2 years. And yeah, this is his new piece. It literally just came out this month, and I think it's probably going to be in theaters till the beginning of next month, because I think another new anime-esque movie is going to be coming out. But to sell you on the premise is basically about a high school student who becomes a globally beloved singer after entering a fantastic virtual world. She soon embarks on an emotional and epic quest to uncover the identity of a mysterious beast who's on the run from ruthless vigilantes. So I, like I said, I had kind of seen this movie. I'm not sure. I saw the dub version of this movie, obviously, so I don't really remember like who the voice cast was. I'm gonna try to see if I can look up that now. If I can't, I will just leave it to. Hold on, let me just put. I'm on my computer, so I should have had this ready beforehand. But life of broadcast, right? Anyways, okay, yeah, I don't care. I'm not gonna have enough time. Anyways. So this movie was absolutely amazing. I absolutely loved it. Hosoda has a great way of like introducing you into worlds very quickly. He's a really great world builder in the sense that he doesn't harp on the minutiae of the world he's trying to establish so lengthily. He kind of does it through the opening credits, and usually like the rest of the work is done through the characters saying certain things or, you know, situational exposition in that way. That makes sense for the movement of the story. So he doesn't give you everything at once, but when things start to piece together, I had watched this film like 3 times now, and I've enjoyed it every single time I've seen it. It gets better and better for me. The animation is absolutely stunning. It's like stupid gorgeous, per usual with a Studio Chizu film. And he just absolutely impressed me with this film, and I'm hoping more people see it. I think it did come out last year in like Japan and everything. It's basically barely coming to the United States domestic market. So I'm super, super excited for whatever his next project is going to be. I would love to see him direct like a live action thing, but I know sometimes There are certain reasons why storytellers and films like Belle are told through the animated format, and why some stories, like for instance, like Minari, that was directed by Lee Isaac Chung, like is told through, you know, live action means. But knowing how he works with characters and how he brings these smaller, more intimate stories to bigger frames is very interesting. I'd just love to see his take on a live action film if he were to do one. So that's definitely one that I recommend that you check out. Like I said, it's in theaters right now, which is why I put it in my honorable mentions, just because it delivered on my assumption of it being one of my favorites of the year. And so far it started off my year right. And I just love, I really love the film, and I hope more people go out to see it, because this industry still, in terms of like the anime industry, down in the East, they don't get a lot of resources the way we do have in the United States, in the sense that some of the artists don't get paid a lot, and most of them either like really have to work so frivolously hard. And this is for all animation as well, but you know, I'm sure we have better means than they do in terms of like, all I know is that from what I've been told about the industry, they work a lot harder, because they're a lot of times the money that they make for films like these, they don't come back grand. Like, they're not Pixar films, you know, and they do obviously traditional hand-drawn animation as well, which takes it's more expensive and takes the process to have a little bit more time that's needed to incorporate all of that stuff together with the 3D visual aspects that they have to include in the film, which is why I highly recommend that you go support it, so we can continue to get more films like this and continue to support those artists that do that great work. And congrats to Hosoda and the whole team at Studio Chizu, and I hope to see more from that director with his next film. So the next one that I kind of wanted to give a shout out to is, sorry, I'm looking at my thing, is The Flash. So The Flash is going to be directed by Andres Muschietti, from a script by Christina Hodgson, who I believe wrote Bumblebee, and she also wrote, it says Hodgson, not Hodgson, so I'm curious if that's the same lady. Okay, she did write Birds of Prey. She wrote Birds of Prey for DC and Bumblebee. And she's just been a hot name in the industry right now, to be honest. She's like very hot in the industry in terms of like her work ethic and the amount of projects, these high profile projects she's been attaining, which I'm so happy for. It's really cool to see someone like that in the industry doing their thing. Same thing with Andy Muschietti. And I'm assuming his sister will probably produce the film alongside Zack Snyder and his wife and Walter Hamada and Marianne Jenkins, I guess. So The Flash is an upcoming in America. The premise of The Flash is about The Flash, which is an upcoming American superhero film based on the DC Comics character of the same name, produced by DC Films, Double Dream, and the Disco Factory, and set for distribution by Warner Brothers Pictures. It is intended to be the 12th film in the DC Extended Universe. It stars Ezra Miller as Barry Allen. I'm sorry, I can't talk to it. I'm still kind of tired. Barry Allen / The Flash, alongside Ron Livingston, Michael Keaton, Kiersey Clemons, Michael Shannon, Ante Troll, Sasha Kale, and Ben Affleck. In the film, wow, really? Really, motorcycle? In the film, Alan travels back in time to prevent his mother's murder, which brings unintended consequences. So as you can see, Andy Muschietti, he just came off of directing the two It films for Warner Brothers. This film was in such a long, just, we were supposed to get this film, believe it or not, in 2017, apparently. And there were so many people that were signed on to direct this film, starting from like Seth Graham Smith, who's been a big proprietor of, like, he's been a Warner Brothers director for a while. He also helped Andy Muschietti produce all the It films, and he's been a horror director of his own right. Rick Famuyiwa, who you may know from Dope fame, and he's done a lot of TV, and I believe he had signed on to do this as well, but I guess, like, you know, plans change, and then they brought on the directors of Game Night, also the writer, the some of the co-writers for the very first MCU Spider-Man movie of Homecoming, and John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein. I believe now they're directing the upcoming D&D project that's going to be releasing, I believe, this year, if I'm not mistaken, which I'm going to talk about later. But it seems that I'm sorry, I'm trying to like see if it's actually here. Okay, that's not coming out until next year, apparently, that D&D film. But yeah, it seems like they finally know what direction they'd like to take. I've been hearing rumors, and you can find this on articles everywhere, that this Flash movie will be serving as some kind of pseudo reboot, or Warner Brothers basically picking and choosing what they want to keep as the main timeline within the DCEU. In all honesty, I don't really think this universe should exist anymore. I think they should legitimately just, like, if they really do want to still keep the characters that they want together, I don't even think they should really be together anymore. Like, they should just separate every, like, all the DC movies right now, they should just separate, because there's no real, I feel like, interconnected universe anymore. Yeah, we keep getting the same actors that were already, like, established in the other movies, but I just don't see a world where the DCEU is a thing anymore, when, like, one day keep bringing, like, and I'm going to be kind of ranting a little bit here. This is just my personal opinion, so don't go, like, to my door with pitchforks or anything like that, but I just don't feel like this film did enough to get to that point, in terms of, like, the first film they're doing is about Flashpoint, which in retrospect is like the No Way Home of what the DCU should be in that way. I don't know why, but they're like really wanting to jump the gun on starting the whole thing over. And in my opinion, it just needs a whole brand new clean slate, meaning, like, you know, they give Ezra Miller his three movies, maybe give Gal Gadot her last movie in Wonder Woman 3, give Momoa his two other films, and then after that, like, you know, they just wipe, they, like, wait 5 years, maybe, like, reboot the whole DCU, have a plan, have an actual plan, and then go on about, you know, creating the world that they'd like, that they wanted to create a long time ago. Granted, there are still some movies being made within the DCEU universe, apparently. And what I mean by that is stuff like Batgirl, which is I believe they just released, like, an image for that, and stuff like Blue Beetle, stuff like what I'm about to talk about with Black Adam in a few too. So it's like, I also wanted to not reboot, but, you know, I'm assuming it eventually will, kind of thing. But yeah, it's, I don't know, the DC, I'm just, like, really mixed on the DCEU, because I don't like the fact that there's no plan, but I also kind of don't like the fact that it's still going, if that makes sense. Like, even though there are some movies still that I want to exist in a universe where all the films are interconnected, like Black Adam, like Blue Beetle, because I like the actors that are involved in it, like Dwayne Johnson, I love his movies, and Shola Maridueña, like, I love him as an actor, and I really appreciate those types of actors getting the opportunities that they deserve. But, like, I'm like, damn, like, I just see that, like, even Black Adam and the Shazam, I'm gonna get into all this, but I am glad that the movie's being made. I just don't really have a lot of faith in it, in terms of, like, I have a lot of faith in, like, the team, but I just feel like it's gonna feel like one of those movies that could have been greater if the build to it was a lot better, if that makes sense. Although I feel like it will be a solid movie, because it is Andy Muschietti, and I trust him behind the camera. Same with Christina Hodgson. I've liked a lot of the movies that she's written for thus far. I did enjoy Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey, all that jazz, and Bumblebee as well. So I'm kind of digging what they're putting out with this. I just feel like Flashpoint is just so soon, and I don't know why they want to go with that, but I also understand why they want to go with that. And I'm like, you do you, boo boo, if that's what you want. Hopefully we hear Henry Cavill getting a Superman movie soon, eventually, because I really miss him as Superman. I really want to see at least one movie with him again. You know, I feel like that movie would make a lot of money, believe it or not. And I feel like if they brought back Zack Snyder to direct it, I think he would be able to finish the journey he wanted to start, at least with that character, within one movie if they gave him the shot. But anyways, now I'm just ranting, but It is one of my most anticipated films of the year, just because of the fact of how many writers it went through, how many directors it went through, and I'm very curious to see what happens with this film next. So, with that being said, going on to the next one, which is another big superhero flick known as... Sorry, give me 1 second, please. Okay. The next film that I wanted to put on my honorable mentions is Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which is an upcoming American superhero film based on the Marvel Comics character Doctor Strange, produced by Marvel Studios and distributed by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. It is intended to be the sequel to the 2016 Doctor Strange film and the 28th film of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The film was directed by Sam Raimi. Ooh. From a script written by Jade Haley Bartlett and Michael Waldron, and stars Benedict Cumberbatch as Stephen Strange alongside Benedict Wong, Rachel McAdams, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Elizabeth Olsen, and Shodil Gomez. In the film, Strange casts a spell that opens the door to the multiverse, including an alternative version of Doctor Strange. So, this is a very interesting project only because, one, they've switched directors, which is has become a little bit more rare in Marvel now, with Taika Waititi coming on to do his sequel. Peyton Reed did his sequel to Ant-Man. Thor did, like I said, Waititi with Thor. And they also brought back James Gunn, who will be, I think he'll be the first director in the MCU to direct all three of his films, meaning like his character. That the characters that he brought to the MCU, like, he's going to finish their whole story, which is really, really cool to think about, because it seems like that's, I don't know, they just haven't done that with the other Marvel films, because usually the director either leaves or they're replaced, or they don't want to do, like, the third movie, or they just get busy with other projects. And even Ryan Coogler has stayed on to direct his sequel, so for the next Black Panther movie. So it's really cool to, like, see that they're really trying. But the reason why this is interesting is because Sam Raimi is going to be directing this movie. And with everything that happened in No Way Home, it's going to be very interesting to see where the Marvel Cinematic Universe goes from here. And obviously, not everybody loved The Eternals. I was pretty solid on it. I thought it was good. Everybody loved No Way Home, which I think ended the year off strong for the MCU. And kind of created a new sense of mystique to the next few films that will be coming out fairly soon. So I don't really have much to say about this other than the fact that I think it's interesting that Sam Raimi has kind of come on to direct another superhero film under the guise of, like, a person he worked with back in the day in Kevin Feige. But this time Kevin Feige is the big boss man, and I'm sure that he'll be able to work collaboratively with Sam Raimi in the sense that they'll both get... have a great time, and they'll both be able to be as nerdy as they want. And I'm sure Feige has a good sense of knowing how to get what he needs to in order to continue the universe while letting the director do their thing as much as they're allowed to with the scope of what they've already built in consistency so far for the MCU. With the addition of Elizabeth Olsen, obviously that's going to be interesting to see how the TV verse of Marvel, now that they're recognizing it, commits with the film verse of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think this will be the first test of that, to see, like, how what we learned from WandaVision, how it's going to relate to Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. So, yeah, there's a lot of things going for the film. I'm glad that it's coming out soon, and, you know, all the best to those peoples making that movie. So that's kind of, I think for now, that's kind of all I had, but I'll just list off a few more. Mission Impossible 7, The Lost City, and also Bullet Train, and probably, I'm sorry, I'm just, like, looking at a random list, but I honestly should have had a whole list put up, but, you know, this would probably be a part one anyways, because I have a lot to say, unless I don't want to do a part one, but if not, then whatever. So, now I'm going to get to the actual, like, films that I'm looking forward to, just because I'm kind of done doing honorable mentions now, and I didn't have enough lists in place, or enough movie lists in place. But moving on, so One of my most anticipated movies is one that has been on the tips of everyone's tongues because it looks so much different from any types of superhero movie that we've seen in a while, but it also has the feeling that it's going to be something special in the sense that the team behind it and the person playing this character in this iteration is a unconventional choice to some, but if you've seen his work post his like big on-screen mainstream breakthrough roles in the early thousands, then you'll understand why Matt Reeves chose our new Batman in Robert Pattinson, coming off of his work on The Lighthouse and things like Good Times with the Safdie brothers. There's just a lot you can do with this new Batman, and Warner Brothers is really, really all in on Matt Reeves's Batman in terms of like, they've not only given this man a film, they're also making two TV shows, one based off on the Penguin and the other based on the GCPD in this Batman universe that Matt Reeves has created. They're expecting big things out of this movie, really, really big things. And I'm very curious to see not only what this movie is about, but the route it takes in portraying this character. I haven't even introduced the film yet. I'm sorry. I'm like already nerding out before I even, you know, talk about it. But okay, let's take it from the top for a minute. So sorry, I need to like move my thing up here right now. Ah, there we go. Okay. It says, The Batman is an upcoming American superhero film based on the DC Comics character Batman, produced by DC Films, Sixth in Idaho, and Dylan Clark Production and set for distribution by Warner Brothers Pictures. It is a reboot of the Batman film franchise. The film was directed by Matt Reeves, who wrote the screenplay with Peter Craig. It stars Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne Batman alongside Zoe Kravitz, Paul Dano, Jeffrey Wright, John Turturro, Peter Sarsgaard, Andy Serkis, and Colin Farrell. Set in his second year of crime fighting, the film sees Batman uncover corruption in Gotham City while pursuing the Riddler, a serial killer who targets Gotham's elite. So this film also kind of went through one of those like Flash-esque type of development stages, in the sense that Ben Affleck was tapped to do the Batman movie for the DCEU because of his work in The Town and Argo. Him being Batman and him directing it at the time was obviously a very good pick given all the work that he had done and how people received his Batman, which was astoundingly felt like the Batman v Superman would have been even better if he had his own movie before that. I kind of agree with that, but, you know, they went a different route than I totally understand. But either way, there was, like, a lot of hesitation as to if he would actually do it or not. We saw Joe Manganiello at the end of Justice League. We thought that would be, like, his main villain in the Batman movie, which they were setting up. You know, he had written it, all that jazz, and circumstances had came into play circumstances in the life of Ben Affleck and in the Warner Brothers studio and a whole bunch of other stuff with the DCU prompted his exit as director, and then kind of like left his role as Batman in like a lull, meaning like nobody really knew once Justice League came out if he was still going to be Batman, if he was going to still play Batman, all that jazz. He said he would. Long story short, he didn't. And now it's very clear that after The Flash, he may not portray this character in the DCU or the long-running gestation of the DCEU after The Flash. From what I've heard, it's like his final send-off, which obviously a man's mental health is obviously more important than a movie. So I am glad that he decided to, you know, take a step back for himself, kind of retool everything and do what he needs to do to get himself in a great place, which it seems like he is now. And I'm so happy for Ben Affleck. He's a wonderful performer, and I've liked him in almost everything that I've seen him in. I loved him in Dazed and Confused and Good Will Hunting and all of his other classic films. But with that being said,
the studio had to find somebody else to direct the film, and they found Matt Reeves, who was also an absolutely amazing storyteller, a la Planet of the Apes trilogy. If you haven't seen that, even though he didn't direct the first one was not his, but the other two after that, meaning like Rise of the Planet of the Apes, War of the Planet of the Apes, or whatever, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Rise was the first one, Dawn was the second one. So he directed Dawn and he directed War of the Planet of the Apes. So I think, and those movies are absolutely beautiful. Like, they're legitimately beautiful. All three, even if he didn't direct the first one, all three of them are just fucking beautiful cinematic masterpieces. I'm still kind of sad that we have not gotten any confirmation on a continuation of that story, because Disney Plus now has the ability to like put stuff on Hulu. You know what I mean? If they want to, that's like their parent subsidiary company where they put a lot of their more mature content. And I would love to see a Planet of the Apes television series so bad. Even if it's like a limited series, I don't care. Like, I would love to see us catch up to the main film, because I only know the plot twist of the main film, but not like the all the film or whatever. I haven't seen the film, but I'd love to see like a build up to that moment, that iconic moment in the original film. Anyways, so the reason why this is interesting is Matt Reeves came on to direct everything and retooled the franchise for his liking, and it was confirmed that it was not going to be a part of the DCEU, and that his film is separate from the ever-changing DCEU, meaning that it's kind of like going to be its own separate thing completely, just like Joker was for DC that Todd Phillips directed. The reason why this is so interesting is because I love the cast. The cast is like so vibrant and young. Usually with Batman, you usually get more established premier top tier actors. A lot of these actors, I mean, obviously they got some big names in here like Peter Sarsgaard, Colin Farrell, Paul Dano, people that have been in the industry for a long time. But these characters that they're playing, stuff like Catwoman, Alfred with Andy Serkis, Jeffrey Wright with Gordon, these are all going to be like retooled in a new way that we haven't seen them. And obviously there's been rumors that the film is very much going to be a detective film in the vein of David Fincher's Seven meets like Chinatown. I think Roman Polanski directed Chinatown. I'm not sure. I don't remember. I'll see real quickly. Hold on. But I think it was him, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it was directed by Roman. Yeah, so they said it was going to be like Roman, like Chinatown meets Seven. And hearing that, I was like, wow, that's like really, really, that's like a great thing to hear, obviously. Or at least I like hearing it. Paul Dano is the Riddler. Oh my gosh. Never have I felt like a casting was so right in like a superhero movie. Especially because when I heard that he was going to play the Riddler and the approach that they were taking with the Riddler, I was like, if they're going the Seven route, then there's going to be something very, probably very divisive at the end of the film if they're going like the Seven route with it and meets like the, you know, Chinatown aspect with it. Nonetheless, though, the cast looks to be amazing. Colin Farrell in that prosthetic outfit looks like perfect, obviously. Zoe Kravitz, same thing, even though I've mostly tried to stay away from looking at all the trailers just because I want to go into the film not knowing anything. Robert Pattinson looks like he's going to kill it. The film looks like it's going to be absolutely a fun watch, and a solid directorial effort from Matt Reeves and his whole team there at DC and the DC team. I can't wait to see this type of Batman that we're going to get, who's definitely been doing this for a few, but not like long enough to know. Like, he hasn't been doing it long enough to be like the Michael Keaton or Christian Bale Batman, but he's young enough to not be so brand new at being Batman, I guess. So he's kind of like, I feel like he's like the Tom Holland of all the Batmans right now. Or I guess what I'm trying to say is like, he's not as young as So if Ben Affleck was like the older, more like curmudgeon-y, you know, jaded Batman, and Michael Keaton was like the middle of the age, already I know what I'm doing is Batman kind of Batman, and then Christian Bale was kind of like the middle of the run Batman too in a way. Well, he kind of had like more of the beginning middle type feel to him because he did have like a start, but he was already, it felt like he was kind of already Batman before even in Batman Begins. But it seems like with this Batman, we may be getting a younger version that we haven't seen portrayed on screen, in the sense that this guy may not make the best choices all the time, and we may not agree with his choices, but we'll understand why he's doing what he's doing in the city he's working within. And I think taking that approach with that detective, hard-boiled approach to it, is very, very cool. Which is why I'm really excited for the film. It's like one of my most anticipated. So moving on to my next most anticipated, this may surprise some people, but Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I cannot say Hedgehog. Hedgehog 2 is one of my other films that I'm very, very excited about. And let me tell you why. So I had seen before the lockdown happened and the pandemic happened, Sonic the Hedgehog was probably like the last film me and my brother legitimately went to go see before everything started shutting down. It was either that or Onward, but this was definitely one of those films we came back to because nothing else was playing in theaters. And to give you a good look at what Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is about, it is an upcoming adventure film based on the video game franchise Sonic the Hedgehog, published by Sega. It is the sequel to Sonic the Hedgehog from 2020, with Joe Fowler returning to direct from a script by Pat Casey, Josh Miller, and John Whittington. The cast includes Ben Schwartz, who also returns as Sonic, the voice of Sonic, Colleen O'Shaughnessy, Idris Elba, James Marsden, Tika Sumpter, Natasha Rothwell, Adam Pally, Shamar Moore, and Jim Carrey. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 follows Sonic and Tails as they try to prevent Dr. Eggman and Knuckles, the Echidna, from finding the Master Emerald. Okay, so it seems like that's what the movie's about. I'm very curious because this film, the last film, like I said, was the last film I saw in theaters, and I really had a good time with it. Seems like they kind of know where they're going with this franchise, and this is like one of the first profitable, like, you know, at least for Paramount's sake, and also for like the scope of video game movies' sake, it seems like it's on the up and up, and putting some respect on video game movies' names in that way. I'm really happy to see that they're getting a sequel to this movie. I'm still surprised we never ever got a sequel to Detective Pikachu, because I'm sure that made a lot of money when it came out. Obviously, it's kind of too, I wouldn't recommend doing a sequel now, but I would love to see like more movies in that world too. But it's really cool that these video game movies are starting to make their way. And like I said, I'm very excited because I like the idea of Idris Elba voicing Knuckles and Colleen O'Shaughnessy voicing Tails, and the whole with Jim Carrey returning as Dr. Eggman, who it looks like he's having a ball with that role. And the first film delivered what I thought it was going to deliver. I'm not going into this movie expecting like Oscar worthy acting, but I just want to have fun with the sequel and hope to be able to continue to see this franchise thrive in that way. And yeah, like, props to the team. I can't wait to see it. So the next film that I wanted to talk about being my most anticipated is the Bob's Burgers movie. Now, this is an upcoming animated musical comedy film based on the animated television series Bob's Burgers, created by Lauren Bouchard, who co-wrote, co-produced, and directed in his feature directorial debut with Bernard Dairyman. The original voice cast from the series reprised their roles, including Kristen Schaal, H. John Benjamin, John Roberts, Dan Mintz, Eugene Merman, Larry Murphy, Zach Galifianakis, and Kevin Kline. So, I'm going to just read what the premise is. It says, the Bob's Burgers movie is an animated big screen musical comedy adventure based on the long-running Emmy-winning series. The story begins when a ruptured water main creates an enormous sinkhole right in front of Bob's Burgers, blocking the entrance indefinitely and ruining the Belchers' plans for a successful summer. While Bob and Linda struggle to keep their business afloat, the kids try to solve the mystery that could save their family's restaurant. As the dangers mount, these underdogs help each other find hope and fight to get back behind the counter where they belong. All right, so Bob's Burgers was something that I found like 3 years ago, actually. And I went back to rewatch the whole series, and I've absolutely fell in love with this show. It's such an amazing show. Obviously, it's not breaking like new traditional adult animating grounds, but it is in the sense that the writing is so like endearing, and it's endearing in the same way that like The Simpsons was endearing, like in the early days, where it's about just this regular family trying to do their best to get by, and doing it with each other, and doing it with heart. And I do like the fact that it's not always like fart and dick jokes, like, you know, like, and this note, because I love Family Guy and American Dad too, and all that jazz. Like, I just love that this show kind of hits different in that way. And it's special in its own unique take at this genre that could feel overblown sometimes or feel overzealous in other moments. And like I said, I love stuff like, I love my dick and fart jokes too, but it's also nice to know that there's a variety within this genre, so to speak, like that, like American Dad, like Family Guy, like Rick and Morty, which are all shows that I watch and I love for their own unique reasons. Same thing with like F is for Family from Bill Burr that just ended on Netflix. If you haven't watched that, go watch that. But the reason why this is so interesting is because this was one of those, during the deal with Disney, this is one of those things that they acquired from Fox in terms of their movie division. And it's really cool to see that, one, that the film was still being worked on and that it's finished, and two, that this film is coming out, because I didn't think that they would ever get to this movie. I remember hearing it about it like 2 years ago or whatever. They said they would always make a movie, but I didn't really know if they were just joking about that or if that was going to ever happen, especially with the merger between Fox and Disney and all that. But it's so cool that it's coming out. It looks like it's going to be a summer release, which is great. It means that Disney has a lot of confidence that it'll make them money. And I'm sure it will, because a lot of people love this show. And I'm hoping that it's not as niche as I think it is, given like its fan base. But I really, really hope to see this film make some money for them. And I hope to be able to see more movies if we're able to, if this works and all that jazz. So, yeah. So, the next film that I like to talk about is the Elvis biopic. So this film, Elvis, is an upcoming biographical musical drama film about Elvis Presley, directed by Baz Luhrmann. From a screenplay written by Luhrmann, Sam Bromell, Craig Pierce. Wow, this guy Craig Pierce is getting a lot of work lately, bro. Chill. Jeremy Donner, with a story by Luhrmann and Donner. It stars Tom Hanks and Austin Butler, with Olivia Dejean, Yola Courtley, Luke Bracey, Calvin Harris Jr., Dacre Montgomery, Helen Thompson, Richard Roxburgh, and David Wenham in supporting roles. It's expected to be released on June 24, 2022 by Warner Brothers Pictures. The premise is that it chronicles the life and career of rock and roll legend Elvis Presley. So, I don't know, but with this film, I think my most, the reason why I like the idea of this film so much is because we have Luhrmann, Tom Hanks, who's kind of leading all this stuff, and the real surprise here is Austin Butler. The reason I say that is because we've heard names like Dacre Montgomery. He's been in Power Rangers. He's been in Stranger Things. Calvin Harris Jr., he's been in Waves. He's also been rumored to be, like, the huge fan cast for Miles Morales, amongst, like, names like Shameik Moore. And now Dallas Dupree Young, who, if you haven't seen Cobra Kai, he's in that, and he plays Kenny. And I really, really love the fact that we're getting these younger actors in this role. Luke Bracey, the last time I saw him, I feel like the last time I saw a movie that he was in was Hacksaw Ridge with Andrew Garfield, directed by Mel Gibson, which is also a great movie. But back to the main thing. Austin Butler is the main thing that I'm excited for here, because keep in mind, this guy was, I used to watch this man on Nickelodeon. He was on stuff like iCarly. He was in Zoe 101 for a minute. And I want to say he may have been in Drake and Josh, but I don't know about that. I can't confirm that. But nonetheless, this guy, seeing him and his work progress He was just recently in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for Quentin Tarantino as the main Manson family character we followed, or one of the three, along with like Maya Hawke and that other lady played by Maddie Mikey or whatever her name is from Scream, the new Scream movie. He was really, really good in the scenes that he had. And when I heard he was going to be, when he was cast as Elvis Presley, I was like, wow, they must really, and I mean, he does play the guitar. I've seen that in a lot of his other roles. He does, he's musically gifted in that sense. I'm sure he could do the choreography if he learned it. The real thing is Baz Luhrmann here is like, he's known for wanting things done a certain way. He's known for his perfectionist-esque quality. And I also hear that he could be like one of those directors that is a no-nonsense, but very studious and dutiful director, intelligent director in the types of stories he tells. So the fact that he's kind of relying on this young star to, alongside Tom Hanks, to kind of like elevate this film about this rock and roll legend known as Elvis Presley is very interesting to me. I think it could be like a big, I mean, if anything, this will probably be his breakthrough role if he kills it. You know what I mean? And I'm talking about Austin Butler. Working with Baz Luhrmann, Tom Hanks, like the rub from them would be obviously amazing for his career. So I'm really hoping all great things for this movie, only because I like him as an actor so much. So there we go with that. So that's one of the films that I'm excited that's coming out, that's going to be coming out, because it's just so interesting. Okay, next film. Now, sorry. Okay, the next film we will be talking about is, sorry, I'm trying to find out what I'm trying to look at. There we go. There's no way this, so is this film really coming out? Okay. So the next movie that I want to talk about is Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which is an upcoming American superhero film based on the Marvel Comics character Black Panther, produced by Marvel Studios and distributed by Walt Disney Motion Studios Pictures. It is intended to be the sequel to The Black Panther and the 30th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The film is being directed by returning director Ryan Coogler, who co-wrote the screenplay with returning screenwriter Joe Robert Cole, and stars Lupita Nyong'o, Danai Gurira, Martin Freeman, Letitia Wright, Winston Duke, Angela Bassett, and brand new character Dominic Thorne, or brand new character actor within this film, Dominic Thorne. So, this film is going to, obviously with the significance of the first film of Black Panther, this film is obviously going to be one that's on people's minds a lot when the marketing for it begins, because of the unfortunate passing of the amazing, wonderful Chadwick Boseman, who obviously, when he passed, Marvel had decided not to recast the role of T'Challa. And that's something I've kind of been iffy on, because although the concept of the character is that anyone that has the right to be Black Panther can become Black Panther as king or queen or whatever, I do feel like with the symbolicness of what T'Challa represented, not only to for the MCU, but also to the millions of people that, billions, that went to go see this movie and connected with his character, from Civil War to his own film to Infinity War to Endgame, I think that taking that character away is definitely going to feel a little bit jarring. Granted, Ryan Coogler is an amazing storyteller. If you've seen Fruitvale Station and the first Creed or movie, then I really have no reason to worry, to be honest. I really don't. But it does suck that they didn't recast him in that sense that we don't get to see this character live on, symbolically in honor of Chadwick Boseman. But you know, I can also understand Marvel's point in recasting him, because that role is so iconic and so tied to Chadwick Boseman that it would be hard for anybody to step in those shoes. But I'm sure, like, you know, they know what they're doing is basically what I'm trying to say. So I understand both points, obviously. Now, the plot details are very scarce. From what I know, about it. I know that it has like something to do with some types of people infiltrating Wakanda of some sort, trying to find some treasure. Like, that's what I've heard so far, but that's just with little bits and pieces of casting news from the villains that they've been casting. And obviously, Dominique Thorne is also very interesting because we know that that there is an Ironheart Disney Plus series that's going to be coming its way. That was announced during the D23 investors announcement day thing. And Dominique Thorne, I'm assuming, will be introduced in this film as Ironheart, Riri Williams. And that's going to be very, very interesting to see. Because some people do not mesh well with derivative characters of, you know, Batgirl or, you know, like Ironheart. You know, I heard she's one of these, like, comic book characters that not a lot of the comic book fans have been loving so much because she feels like a little bit of a derivative, but I think in different hands, you know, and in the story and what she's coming into, I think the audience will be obviously a little bit more open to someone like this being introduced to the MCU, not taking Iron Man's place, but just having, I guess, his presence and energy come through and shine through. And I'm very interested to see how she plays into effect. I'm also kind of curious to see if they ever, like, have her or introduce Storm. That would be really cool if they introduced Storm in this movie, but I don't want to get too nerdy and disappoint myself, but I'm really just curious about what this movie is going to be about. Should be a fun watch when it comes out and a very emotional watch as well, and I can't wait to see what they do. And, yeah, I guess that's all I got to say about that. Okay, so let's see what else I got. Okay. Oh, he is in it. That's cool. Okay. I didn't know that. So, the next film that I wanted to talk about that is going to be coming out actually fairly soon, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is The Northman, which is an upcoming American epic historical film directed by Robert Eggers, co-written by Eggers and Sion. Set at the turn of the 10th century in Iceland, it stars Alexander Skarsgård as Viking Prince Amleth, who sets out on a mission of revenge after his father is murdered by his uncle. The film also stars Nicole Kidman, Claes Bang, Anya Taylor-Joy, Ethan Hawke, Bjork, and Willem Dafoe, who appear in supporting roles. So, this film is interesting because Robert Eggers has dipped his toe in a lot of, you know, in surrealist filmmaking, but also horror, thriller type filmmaking. And the reason why I've enjoyed his film so much is because he's proven himself to be a director of strong character driven stories, emphasizing on the psychology of characters in their quieter moments and in their grander, more broad moments, while still keeping the story very personal and through and mainstream or have a through line enough to follow. And I just love the way he handles his films. He's a director that I'd like to be able to become in terms of like people knowing my style, people knowing what they're going to get when they're going to come to my movie. I just love the comfort of being handled by him. He's one of these up and coming directors that I just love hearing that he's continuing to do great work and that studios are allowing him to make the types of movies he wants to make. I just can't wait to see this film. It looks like one of these films that my dad used to go take me to go see when I was little, meaning like he used to love a lot of these war epic type of movies. He used to love a lot of these big, more scaly in terms of like the scope of it not being too fantastical, but also not being too like bland, I guess. And this just feels like a movie like my dad would have taken me to go see at like 10 or whatever. So it's one of those things that I can't wait to see it because I've loved Eggers' work so far, and I can't wait to see what he does with an action epic like this. You know what I mean? It's just going to be something new that we've seen from him compared to like the last movie we saw from him, which was The Lighthouse, which is just like two people in one location isolated, and that was the story. So it should be very interesting to see what's going to happen with this one. You know, I'm not going to lie. Okay. So with that being said, we move on to the next one. And the next film that I'm excited for, which is... Sorry about that. Should have had this ready already, but it's not ready. We'll do this one, why not? Okay. So, the next film that I'm very excited for is Lightyear, which is an upcoming American computer animated science fiction action film produced by Pixar Animation Studios and Walt Disney Pictures and distributed by Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. It is a spin-off of the Toy Story film series, serving as an origin story for the fictional human character Buzz Lightyear, who inspired the action figure of the same name. This film was directed by Angus McLean in his feature directorial debut and stars the voices of Chris Evans as the titular character with Taika Waititi. The film explores Buzz Lightyear, a young test pilot who will become a space ranger. So, this is also an interesting piece here. Not only has is this like Disney's like first spinoff film, but I guess what I'm trying to say is the reason why this is so interesting is because so far for the past few years, starting with Soul, when that movie came out, Disney has done this thing where they've released all of the Walt Disney Studios created animated pictures, but I've continuously began to sidetrack and almost just direct to DVD video their other subsidiary company in Pixar. And the reason why that's interesting to me is because recently they just announced that Turning Red, the newest Pixar film, will now be premiering on Disney Plus. Now, granted, I do still hope that there may be some inclination of like that film releasing in theaters at least for 1 week. You know what I mean? Just to see, you know. And I'm hoping, I don't really know why they felt the need to do this, in my opinion. I just don't think that's a good, great move. Like, keep in mind, like, yeah, it's going to get you some big numbers on Disney Plus, but films like these, like, Pixar movies make money. They're not like that first movie I mentioned. Like, they're not like Belle, where it's like the studio is still unrecognizable to some people here in the United States and everything like that. Like, Pixar is homegrown, full-blooded, patriotic USA, you know, knows what it is, has made billions of dollars for Disney, and a whole lot more than most of their other studios that they've had for a few years in that sense. And I just, I'm very interested to see what they do with this movie, because they've been doing that to all the other Pixar movies. So I'm curious to, like, see if they'd have the balls to, like, put this on Disney Plus directly. Now, I'm sure people like Chris Evans, you know, Taika Waititi probably have back-end deals to, like, prevent something like that from happening. And Chris Evans is a big name, obviously, you know, with his work that he's been doing lately in the more smaller demographic route and the indie budget features and that he's been doing, like, Don't Look Up and also Knives Out, films like that. He's also going to be in a movie with Ryan Gosling that the Russo brothers are directing. I just don't know if that'll be enough for Disney to be like, oh, you know what? Let's release it. Especially because it's a spinoff. It's going to be their first spinoff from an already developed successful franchise. So we're not getting something new like Soul or Luca or Turning Red. It's something that's already established. So if there is a strongest chance for a Pixar film to return to the theaters, this is definitely that film. And I'm wondering if this film does well, will that mean that we get those Pixar films back in theaters and that Disney sees like, oh, we're losing money because we're not putting this in the theaters. I mean, they're not losing money, but Disney Plus, because it's still brand new and because Disney hasn't been churning out content every single day like Netflix does, and that's Netflix's model, and most of the stuff that they make are pretty good, and you know what I mean? But it's very few and far between where that thing that they make catches fire and just shoots to the moon. But and that's not a knock to Netflix. That's not what I'm saying. It's just that Netflix has become profitable for Netflix, but Disney Plus has not yet began to make profit for Disney because it's still brand new and the content is still a little bit scarce in terms of like them creating new content for their viewers every single day or every single month. And you know what I mean? But what they have churned out is good and has made them, gotten them critical acclaim and has given them a lot of big buzz throughout the year. Like at the beginning of, it was probably last year. In the beginning of last year when WandaVision came out, obviously that was on everybody's like, this is obviously, I have to wrap this up in a few. So I'm going to try to like be quick about this, but I'm hoping that this movie makes the money that it needs to make to show Disney that there is still a lot of craving for a Pixar film, new Pixar films, and that they shouldn't be sidetracking their most profitable studio or one of their most profitable studios that they've ever had. So with all that being said, I'm really excited for the film. It looks beautiful. I love the first trailer. This was one of the trailers that I did see. And I think it's going to look really cool. If this is the movie that Andy saw, then damn, I'm going to go get Buzz Lightyear bed sheets after this. But I think I only have 10 more seconds left. So hope you enjoyed this part of the episode. I can't wait to see you in the next one. Peace. All right, we're going to continue to through this list. I kind of ran out of time with the other recording that I just did, so I hope you guys enjoy this next bit. We're kind of winding down on the list, but I have just a few more films I'd like to discuss with y'all that I'm very, very excited for within the next year coming out. So we're going to start with a film called The Fabelmans, which is an upcoming American semi-autobiographical coming-of-age drama film directed by Steven Spielberg from a screenplay he co-wrote with Tony Kushner. It is scheduled to be released by Universal Pictures on November 23rd, 2022, with the starring cast being billed as Michelle Williams, Seth Rogen, Paul Dano, Gabrielle LaBelle, and Julia Butters. So, this film has been spreading around in the industry in the terms of like what it's about is very, very talked about, because the premise of the film will be loosely based on Spielberg's childhood growing up in Arizona, which is where I'm from, which is going to be really, really cool. The reason I say that is because a lot of the team that he's working with on this project is kind of like who he worked with in the recent West Side Story that he just finished directing. I think he co-wrote that with Tony Kushner, if I'm not mistaken, he just co-wrote that with him. And then he also did, he's hiring the same cinematographer that he worked with on West Side Story, which was absolutely a beautiful shot film. And I'm very interested to see the story of this film, because it sounds like it's going to be one hell of a doozy. But and I love the title of the film, The Fabelmans. That's really, really cool. But I don't really know where it's going to go. Like I said, the plot is very scarce. The way I'm imagining the film to be is kind of like Minari meets like, something like, I don't know, something like this, I don't know, something Noah Baumbach would write, or something like that. Just something like small, intimate, very, very crowd pleasing, kind of fan favorite-y kind of thing. And that's kind of how I see the film playing out. So I do like what the film could potentially be about, and I like who's directing it, obviously. He's one of my favorite directors of all time. One of my inspirations in Steven Spielberg. So congrats to him. The film comes out nice. And I'm still kind of upset with Steven Spielberg, because I feel like he could do more for Arizona, but that's just me. With the Arizona filmmaking community, but, you know, I know he's in L.A. or whatever. I don't blame him, but that's one thing that I'm going to definitely talk to him about, like, why he doesn't, like, come back and hook us up a little bit more with some filmmaking opportunities and tries to find some untapped filmmaker, a.k.a. me, to, like, kind of take under his wing and be the Iron Man to my Spider-Man sort of thing. Anyways, that's just me ranting. But I love what the film is about. I hope it does well. It's always great to see one of like the big fours or whatever, the big dog directors still making their small personal films and doing it in their own way with their own conviction. And I like that. So congrats to him and his team. And I hope the film was good. The next film that I'd like to talk about is Killers of the Flower Moon, which is an upcoming American Western crime drama film directed and produced by Martin Scorsese and written by Eric Roth. Based on the 2017 nonfiction book of the same name by David Gran, Leonardo DiCaprio serves as producer and stars alongside Robert De Niro, Jesse Plemons, and Lily Gladstone. This film marks the sixth collaboration between Scorsese and DiCaprio, as well as the 10th collaboration between Scorsese and De Niro. So, this film has been talked about since, like, 2017, I want to say. And it's very interesting that, like, these big-name directors like Scorsese are now starting to find writers that they trust, that they've been working with for the last few films. Eric Roth, I believe, helped him with the writing of Silence, if I'm not mistaken. And he works with another guy too. I forgot who it was that did The Wolf of Wall Street. But he's been working with that guy a lot. He's the guy that helped create Boardwalk Empire with him. But it's nice to see that Scorsese has been giving like these, him and Spielberg have been working with these writers a lot to like flesh out their newest films. I think this film is going to be amazing per usual. It's also got Brendan Fraser in it from what I've been hearing, if I'm not mistaken. He's in it. I just love that Jesse Plemons is in this movie. Thank goodness, because he's slowly but surely been coming back into the fray ever since like Breaking Bad. Obviously he was like mostly known for TV, but it's so cool that I'm starting to see him pop up in all these big movies. Or not big movies, but like critically acclaimed movies. Like this year he was in The Power of the Dog. He did amazing. I'm really hoping, really, really hoping that he has a really prominent role in this film. I just saw him. He's like one of my favorite actors working today. Jesse Plemons is, because I love the guy and I want to meet him so bad. I want to meet him so I could tell him, if they ever offer you the thing, please take that role, bro, because you'd be such a perfect... He'd be a great, like, beast for the X-Men universe, X-Men MCU films, or a great The Thing, and I would love to see him. I think I would like to see him more as The Thing than I would Beast, but, you know, that would just be my choice. If John Watts is listening to this, he cast him as The Thing. But I love Jesse Plemons. I love that he's in this movie. DiCaprio, De Niro, you kind of already know what you're going to get. DiCaprio's on a roll after Don't Look Up, he's going to continue to ride that wave of momentum into 2022 with this film. And it looks to be like it's going to be a very impressive film. And it's going to be distributed by Paramount Pictures and Apple TV Plus, which is really, really cool. I always love those co-productions because it's just really, really cool. So the premise of the film is members of the Osage tribe in the United States are murdered under mysterious circumstances in the 1920s, sparking a major investigation involving J. Edgar Hoover. So I think that the story of it, it's really cool that we're starting to see stories told about indigenous people and their culture and their tribe. Obviously, this looks to be a more like grim look at real life history that occurred in the United States. And hopefully it gets more eyes on these types of tribes and what they've had to go through throughout the years with not a lot of people, you know, looking out for them, being able to share their stories. It's very cool that they're finally getting the chance to be able to show these kinds of stories and more positive ones as well. If you look at things like Taika Waititi's Boy or TV show like Reservation Dogs, stuff like that, What We Do in the Shadows, it's really, really cool to see these different types of people getting their stories out there the way other people of color and other cultures have been able to. So I only hope the best for this film. I hope a lot of people go to see it. And that's kind of what I have for that. It's really cool that they're making this film. So the next film that I'd like to talk about is Disappointment Boulevard, which is an upcoming American comedy horror film written, directed, and produced by Ari Aster, who you may know from Hereditary fame, Midsommar fame, and I believe this will be his third feature film. It stars Joaquin Phoenix, Nathan Lane, Patti LuPone, Amy Ryan, Kylie Rogers, Parker Posey, Stephen McKinley Henderson, Dennis Menochet, Haley Squires, Michael Gandolfini, and Zoe Lister-Jones. This is his third collaboration with A24, which is cool. And the synopsis of the film is described as an intimate decade-spanning portrait of one of the most successful entrepreneurs of all time. That's an interesting title for the movie. At first, I think I read that wrong when I first read this premise, because I thought it would be about multiple different people. Actually, it is. It says entrepreneurs. I think I just read it as entrepreneur. But I'm very curious to see who all these people are going to be playing. I'm assuming we'll get like when I'm thinking of entrepreneurs, I'm thinking of like people like Zuckerberg, you know, like Bezos, Musk, those kinds of people. I'm very curious if this will be like one of those films that will be like a satire based off of those types of people or people like that, or if it will be something along the lines of like, you know, Joaquin Phoenix playing somebody like Steve Jobs or whatever, or, you know, or Steve Wozniak or something like that. Or I don't know what this film is going to be about, but Astro always brings something weird and unique to the table. He's very scary, by the way, even though he seems like a nice guy in person, but I would hate to live in the mind that he cooks up for all these movies that he makes, because they're just really, really messed up and scary sometimes. But I love his films. I go to see them and I enjoy them. Hope everybody supports his films. I really love that Michael Gandolfini's in this film. He's like my main shot to look out for because I love him so much. I loved him in the Sopranos prequel movie. That should have been more about him than anybody else in that movie, but it wasn't, unfortunately, so we didn't get to see his stars shine as bright as I thought we would. But the scenes that he was in, I enjoyed, and he made the movie a lot better for me. I just can't wait for this movie to come out, and I can't wait to see what Astor does with this project. And I also can't wait to see Parker Posey in this movie, because I feel like the Hollywood hasn't seen her in a long time, or at least I haven't seen anything she's done in a while, so it's nice to see her get back in the fray, too. All right, guys, now we're in like the midst of the final few films that I'm going to be going through here. So I know it's sounding like it's going to be a lot, but I promise y'all it's almost done. So the next film that I want to talk about is also another horror film. It's called Nope. And it is an upcoming American horror film written, directed, and produced by Jordan Peele under his Monkey Paw Productions banner. The film stars Daniel Kaluuya, Kiki Palmer, and Steven Yeun, and is scheduled to be released by Universal Pictures on July 22nd, 2022. With this film, I don't know what it's going to be about. People, there's like no premise for this film at all yet. And I like that, because Jordan Peele's films are so unique to him and his style of humor and horror that I know I'm probably going to enjoy it. I heard that it's basically similar to this episode of The Twilight Zone where people think it's going to be like an alien, like a suburb alien invasion movies, very similar to like Red Scare early propaganda films, the 1920s, or there's been theories about the film being about that. There's theories about it being about climate change because of the poster of it being like a big cloud looming over this like lively but also isolated suburban looking city. All I know is that the poster looks absolutely beautiful. I love all of Jordan Peele's posters because they just look so well designed and so well crafted. And I love the way his films are named like one words or very few words, like Get Out or Nope or Us. You know, I like stuff like that. It's very consistent. And I love the fonts that he uses for all his films. But I just like his style of directing. I love the cast. The cast is perfect. Kiki Palmer, I haven't seen her in a movie since Aquila and the Bee. That's the last time I watched her in a prominent movie. I'm lying. I saw her in the film that she did with J-Lo and Constance something. I forgot her name. Constance Wu, I want to say, but I could be wrong. What was that movie called? It was about, like, the strippers and everything. Hold on, I'm pretty sure I'll be able to. Hustlers. She was in Hustlers. That's what I remember. Okay, yeah. And she was really, really good in that. I haven't seen her since then. And she was, even though she wasn't the star of it, she was really, really good. So this film and Steven Yeun obviously coming off of a Best Actor nomination, being the first Asian-American actor to win that, an Asian at all, and to like be a part of that nomination, which is crazy, given the Academy's like, you know, 24 years or 100 years of existing or whatever. But I do like the cast. The premise seems like it's going to be very, very cool, even though I don't know what it is. But the poster and the theories that I've been hearing sounds like there's going to be a lot to be a part of this film, and I can't wait to watch it. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on that. I love the idea of Nope, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So the next film that I'm going to be talking about is called The Next Goal Wins, which is an upcoming sports comedy drama film directed by Taika Waititi, who co-wrote the screenplay with Ian Morris. The film is based on the 2014 documentary of the same name by Mike Brett and Steve Jameson about Dutch-American coach Thomas Rongen's efforts to lead the American Samoa national football team, considered the weakest football team in the world, to the qualification for the 2014 FIFA World Cup. Michael Fassbender will star as Rongen alongside Elizabeth Moss, Kaimana, Balua, Cole, Rachel House, who has worked with him on multiple films, Uli Latukefu, Reese Darby, who he's also worked with on a lot of projects, and Will Arnett, who will be replacing Armie Hammer in reshoots. So, the premise says Dutch-American football coach Thomas Rongen is tasked with turning the American Samoan national team, considered one of the weakest football teams in the world, into an elite squad. So, I hear this film, and I see who's going to be in this film and who's directing, and I'm already on board. Taika Waititi is my favorite he's my first inspiration and why I wanted to get into filmmaking so bad. I love his personality. I love his films. And he has been my favorite filmmaker since I ever saw Thor Ragnarok, and I went to go back to check out his earlier work. He has this nice way of creating levity in deep sadness, and I love the way he carries the audience throughout his films without feeling the need to carry or hold their hands, without spoon feeding them. And he's not one of these directors that like cuts off an emotional moment to make a joke. And he's one of these directors that really knows how to let something sit with you and lets you leave the theater wanting more in terms of like wanting to see his next film. I'm so glad that he's been on this kick where he's kind of like Christopher Nolan, in the sense that Nolan, when he was directing the Batman movies, he always did one movie that he wanted to do and then one studio movie like the Batman movies. Like, he did the Batman Begins, and I think he did, like, it was either The Prestige or one of those other smaller films that he did. Then Dark Knight came out, that he did Inception, and then Dark Knight Rises came out, and Returns came out, and then he did whatever film he did after that. I don't remember, but I want to say it was like Dunkirk or something, but I could be wrong. Because I don't really follow his films all that much, I'm not gonna lie. But Taika Waititi has been one of these filmmakers that I absolutely love. I will see anything that he's in, or he directs, or he co-writes, or whatever, or he produces, because he just has his finger on the pulse for a lot of great stuff that's in the industry right now. And I can't wait to see what this film is going to be about. I love the fact that he's working with Searchlight Pictures again, which produced his last independent film, and Jojo Rabbit, which I absolutely fell in love with as well. Reese Darby, Rachel House are familiar names in his line of work. He's worked with them in New Zealand and has also worked with them on American projects, which is also cool. Armie Hammer, with all of the controversy around him, I'm glad that they're deciding to reshoot his scenes with Will Arnett. And I'm glad that they're still keeping the film on the up and up by putting it in theaters this year. Hopefully it doesn't get delayed at all. I'm hoping it gets the same type of awards buzz that Jojo Rabbit got, because the Academy has been loving what he's been doing in the industry so far. He also did Reservation Dogs last year, which was a big film for him. He was also in Free Guy last year as well, which made a lot of money for Disney and Searchlight. So it's really cool that they're doing this stuff, you know? His comedy, I'm sure, is going to be irreverent and clever and witty and works so well. I'm glad that we're going to be getting some actual New Zealand actors, like Aussie actors in the film as well, because I love that about the culture. I'm always in love with the Samoan culture ever since like The Rock and people like that. And I'm always like, wow, I think if I wasn't born African, I'm pretty sure I would have been born like, I would have wanted to have been born in that culture, because their culture seems so lively and seems so the same, kind of like it just feels so alive. Just like I feel like my culture is very much alive and thriving in that way. And it's very cool to see, like I said earlier, and like the indigenous people, native people, be able to get their time in the spotlight and getting their stories told out there. So it's really cool that they're going to be doing this film. I'm very, very excited to see where it goes. So yeah, that's my thoughts on that. So this is going to be, wow, what the hell? Why isn't it have the thing? Sorry about that. Hold on one second. I messed up. All right. So the last film that I'm going to be talking to you guys about that is my most anticipated film. So this is my top film that I feel like is going to be my favorite of the year. At least it's going to be the one that this is my most anticipated film at this moment. Like when this movie comes out, it'll be like the year has been matched for me. And the film that I'm going to be talking to y'all about today, that is my most anticipated film of 2022, is Black Adam, which is an upcoming American superhero film based on the DC Comics character of the same name, produced by New Line Cinema, DC Films, Seven Bucks Productions, and Flynn Picture Co., set for distribution by Warner Brothers. It is intended to be a spinoff of Shazam and the 11th film in the DC Extended Universe, directed by Jean-Colette Serra, from a screenplay by Adam Sitzkiel, Rory Haynes, and Shorab Noshirvani. The film stars Dwayne Johnson as Teth Adam / Black Adam, alongside Noah Centineo, Aldis Hodge, Sarah Shahidi, Quintessenta Swindle, and Pierce Brosnan. So, it seems like there's no premise for this either. I feel like there should be for some reason. Okay, yeah, there's like no premise for this at all for some reason. From what I've heard about this film, it's going to be like century spanning, and it's going to be about this former slave that gets chosen by the gods. Kind of like what was explained in the first Shazam movie about this warrior that the gods chose who descended into madness and eventually brought the world into chaos, which I love. Now, this is why I chose this film. For so long, we've seen Dwayne Johnson, and this is not a knock to Dwayne Johnson. I love him. He's like my favorite actor ever of all time. I know some people have been getting kind of tired of him just kind of playing the same thing over and over and over again. The reason why this is so interesting to me is because, one, this guy was cast as Black Adam before I feel like even the DCEU was even a thing. Like, this film has been in production for like literally since the early thousands, which is insane. And I know most films, like even stuff like The Flash, same thing. But the reason why this is so interesting is because they approached him in 2006 or 2007 to play Shazam, meaning Captain Marvel, or Captain Marvel, meaning Shazam. And he wasn't really interested in that, but he was mostly interested in the antagonist to Shazam, meaning Black Adam. And for so long, this film has been in development. Like, he was cast as in this movie before like Iron Man even came out, which is insane to me. And lo and behold, we would eventually get a Shazam project, which I love Shazam. I'm so glad that movie came out. And it was cool that when the wizard was explaining who Black Adam is in a very like ominous way, we saw like the magical holograph of Black Adam. And that was conjured up by the wizard Shazam in the movie. And if you see that Black Adam, you could tell that he has a very stark resemblance in the film to Dwayne Johnson's build and his look, I guess, that he's going to have in the film. And the reason why this is also interesting is because Jean-Colette Serra, the director that directed him in last year's Jungle Cruise, which I also enjoyed. I enjoyed that film a lot. I think that I don't know. I'm just very, I love what he could be bringing to the table with this project. But my last big thing about this film is that Dwayne Johnson, for the most part, has played a character that's usually like always, you know, the strong, nice, you know, kind of very like happy-go-lucky or, you know, very badass, always badass character. Very rarely do we get to see him. I don't know how to say it, but he does know how to dig down deep, but he hasn't been giving a role where he can sink his teeth into the more dreary, darker side of this. I mean, we kind of got that in Fast Five with Hobbs, because he was the main antagonist to Dominic Toretto's character, but, you know, he was still more so Dwayne Johnson being a badass than he was, you know, a bad guy trying to get this guy. I mean, there was like a good mixture of his personality mixed with this archetype of the strong militia man going after this criminal, similar to like 70s type political thriller type stuff. And ever since then, he's just been obviously franchise Viagra, as John Campia likes to say. He's just pumped out a tons of movies that, you know, vary in quality, but are still fun because he's in them and he knows how to make them very, very entertaining. But with this film, he has the chance to kind of scale down, be a lot more vulnerable than he's ever been in a film, and to also show us something we've never seen from him before. He's going to be leading the film, as he has with a bunch of other films. But in this, he's going to be playing a slave. And this, he's going to be playing a slave that becomes something of a god, like becomes a god, basically. And he has the chance to put on like a Michael B. Jordan-esque performance in Black Panther here, or a performance that will make the audience see him in a different light in terms of like, wow, this guy really has grown as an actor. And wow, like, the passion projects he gets behind when he has that chance, like, he can do more than just shoot guns and have big muscles and make somebody laugh, you know? Which, like I said, is not a bad thing. But this is just so interesting to me because of that factor of, like, the different Dwayne Johnson that we might get in this film. Like, you know, like, the way this... And I really hope that when they were talking about all that stuff about him being a slave, like, being a slave and potentially, like, breaking out to become this god, I really, really want to see that. I really want them to delve. I don't want that to be something that happens within the first 20 minutes and then it's done for the rest of the, like, 2-hour or 1-hour movie we'll get. You know what I mean? I'm hoping that they really, really delve into the history of the DCEU. It seems like that's what they're also going to be using this for, to, like, kind of set up what the Justice League was before Justice Society of America, which is supposedly going to be in the film. And I'm just very excited to see how this plays into the Shazam verse that they created. I also love the post credit scene of Shazam where they're like, oh, who's supposed to be sitting in that seat? And then like, there's like ominous ass music playing when they like cut to that seat, which is obviously intended for Black Adam. And it's a foreshadowing to his character, which I love, because the main girl, one of the girls, is like, you know, whoever he is, I don't care who he is, I'm going to love him like he's a part of our family. And everybody was like, we are too. And they don't know like that he's like a bad guy or whatever. But I'm also curious to see how this relates to what's going to, I assume, be the final Shazam movie. Or not the final Shazam movie, but when they do eventually collide and meet after the second Shazam movie. I'm very curious to see how they'll put that together. Because Zachary Levi will be kind of playing the character that usually Dwayne Johnson plays. And Dwayne Johnson will be playing a character that, at that point, we'll know who he is and we'll see him not super sympathetically, but like in a way where we can relate to his character. And depending on how Johnson portrays this character, it can be one of those things that pops really, really big for him, and shows that he can do more than just what he's done already. So with all that being said, that's kind of like where I want to leave it. I think it's really, really cool that they're making this film, and that it is finally coming out, and that it is a thing, and that they're done filming it. I hope it does good. I know it will do good because Dwayne Johnson will be in it, but I'm hoping the movie is actually really, really good and gangbusters. But other than that, guys, that is basically going to be my top anticipated films of the year. Thank you guys for listening in, and I can't wait to see you guys in the next episode. Peace.